Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. I'm getting up
soon in the morning. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us. We're going to talk about New Zealand black currants are good for your brain. 22 awesome uses for lemongrass essential oil. How a cocktail of common chemicals can trigger cancer. How the Mediterranean diet with its olive oil boosts bone health, and a lot more on health and healing, always citing good quality independent science. We're also going to have a look today at the second most prescribed drug in America. Now, here is the question. How many people does it kill? 20? 300? 1,000? Or 500,000 a year? A new study gives us the answer. Also today from Dr. Gabor Mate, what is addiction? I think we need to focus on this, whether it's addiction to sugar or tobacco or cocaine or marijuana, whatever our addiction is, he shares a different perspective. And then doctors are recognizing that patients who refuse to forgive often stay sick. Quote, harboring these negative emotions, this anger and hatred, creates a state of chronic anxiety, so says Dr. Michael Berry. So he'll share a little more on forgiveness therapy is now being looked at as a way of helping to treat cancer. I remember I try to explain to people, if you ever come to any of the retreats, I try to do one, maybe two a year to help in the fundraising of one of our sister stations. If you're harboring anger, it's not for you. Because trying to get someone who's angry away from that anger, let them see how destructive it is, they then become even angrier. But getting people who are past that and wanting to heal, wanting to forgive, wanting to no longer process disease but process wellness, you have to do a lot of forgiving. So we're going to talk about that. Also, 10 disgusting fast food secrets. They are really, really bad. Most people are not aware of them. So those are some of the issues we're taking on today. Plus, we have a guest. A little more on that in a few moments. First up, lemongrass. It's easy to grow. Has a wonderful flavor. In fact, I grow lemongrass on the ranch where I live. And what I do is I'll break some off. I just rub it in my hands, between my hands. And suddenly that wonderful aroma of the lemongrass bursts forward. And you have it on your hands. You can put it on your face and it'll stay there all day long. In fact, it's a great way to get a good night's sleep. You put a little on your hands and massage it just a tiny bit. Like one drop is all it takes. And you can put it on the sheet or the pillow. Some people have used other fragrances to get a good night's sleep. I find lemongrass is soothing. Well, according to the latest science, two commonly used essential oils are both in the same family. And historically, lemongrass, being one of them, is used to treat fevers and inflammation and digestion. It's also a sedative. But there's a lot more it can do. It's able to do purification, even odor control. So let me go through more than its antimicrobial, more than its anti-inflammatory properties. It's a powerful analgesic, but here's what it can do. It is a muscle and tendon relaxer. What's that mean? It means that when muscles and tendons tighten up, simply apply some lemongrass essential oil, and you get immediate relief. In fact, it works extremely quickly on those, well, let's call them knots and spasms that can come on very quickly in the middle of the night, especially in the calves. It's great for headache relief. In fact, when it comes to headaches, especially allergy-related headaches, lemongrass works in a very good way. Now, you could use peppermint oil also, which works for headaches. either one, or alternate them. It's great for arthritis joint pain. It works to resolve joint pain, and it's terrific, especially if you blend it with birch and geranium essential oils, because those are famous for working on muscles and joints. Pulled muscles, shock, treating wounds, heartburn, yes, spread a couple of drops, mix with a carrier such as coconut oil, or put it into a salve and rub it into the chest and to the abdomen. Relieves heartburn. It's good for indigestion. A drop or two massaged into the abdomen will assist in digestion and reduce fevers. It's a great flea repellent. I massage it into the animals, dogs, cats. You take about 4 drops, massage it into your hands, and then massage your pet from their nose to their tail. And it helps repel fleas. And also, if you put it on your body, massage it in, even on your clothes, it helps repel ticks and mosquitoes and flying biting bugs. And just remember to dilute it a bit of carrier oil or salve if you ever apply it directly to the skin. You never want to apply anything without a diluter to the skin directly. And it helps athlete foot, oily skin, fatigue. It's great as an antidepressant, especially if you put it into a diffuser. And for most people, a diffuser is a necessity, and they're very inexpensive. You can get them from like $19.95 to up around $60. And you just put it upside down into a diffuser, and the diffuser vaporizes it and puts it into the air. Works great at night while you're sleeping. It's antibacterial. It's terrific at reducing bacteria at home. For example, you can put it on paper towel without diluting it and wipe down surfaces, and it'll kill bacteria and viruses. It can help reduce blood pressure. It's a vasodilator and can reduce high blood pressure by relaxing the blood vessels. And it helps with insomnia. And especially if you put lemongrass on the bottom of your feet at night, it has a calming effect. And for those who have body odors, it works to help that as well. So, that's lemongrass, and it's an essential oil, and it's just terrific. Now, I'm always looking for different concentrates that can make a difference in our health. The New Zealand Institute for Plant Research did some unique cutting-edge research on black currants, and they found that it's great for keeping us mentally young and agile, and findings that could have benefit for people who have mental decline, especially with Parkinson's and depression. And this was in collaboration with Northumbria University in the United Kingdom, and they found that the compounds found in New Zealand black currants increase mental performance indicators such as accuracy, attention, and mood. And that is very important. So, this was published in the Journal of Functional Foods, a major journal. Quote, this study is the first to look at the effects of the black currant berry consumption on the cognitive performance of healthy young adults. Our previous research has suggested that compounds found in certain berry fruit may act like monoamine oxidase inhibitors, similar to a class of pharmaceuticals commonly used in the treatment of mood disorders and neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's disease. This research has shown that New Zealand-grown black currants not only increase mental performance, but also reduce the activity of monoamine oxidases, meaning they're going to relax you. So for depression and Parkinson's, what can you do? I suggest that you buy some New Zealand black currant concentrate. Comes in a 32-ounce jar. You can pour maybe 4 ounces of it, because it's concentrated, and put it in your smoothie, and it's terrific for you. Now, something that's not good for you are all these artificial chemicals. In fact, according to Brunel University in the United Kingdom, 50 chemicals the public is exposed to on a daily basis, quote, may trigger cancer when combined. I'll quote this from Brunel University. a global task force of 174 scientists from leading research centers across 28 countries studied the link between mixtures of commonly encountered chemicals and the development of cancer. The study selected 85 chemicals not considered carcinogenic to humans and found 50 supported key cancer-related mechanisms at exposures found in everyday environment. Long-standing concerns about the combined and additive effect of everyday chemicals prompted the Getting to Know Cancer led by the research team and the cancer biologist Dr. Heman Yassi from Brenau University contributed his knowledge regarding genes and molecular changes during cancer development. He quote, "The research backs up the idea that chemicals not considered harmful by themselves are combined and accumulating in our bodies to trigger cancer and might lie behind the global cancer epidemic we are witnessing." So, one more reason why we should pay attention to getting rid of everything that's synthetic and chemical and bringing natural and organic into our lives. And this was published by Oxford University's Carcinogenesis Journal. Also, Asian mushroom extract shows promise as treatment for obesity ills. And it says, this is from Medical Express, this is the Ganoderma lucidum, and it's a very famous mushroom. It in Japan is called reishi mushroom, R-E-I-S-H-I, or manitake, M-A-N-N-E-N-T-A-K-E. It appears to work by correcting an unhealthy mix of microorganisms that colonize the guts, and this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Communications. So, what is the takeaway message? When you're consuming unhealthy foods, you create unhealthy bacteria in your gut. One way we can change that bacteria and hence become healthier is by purging these. Now, vitamin C, lemon juice, caprylic acid, quercetin, garlic, liquefied garlic, onion, liquefied onion, making a juice. All of these help kill bad bacteria and fungi and yeast, and hence then replace it with healthy bacteria, including probiotics, but also this is showing Asian mushroom, the maitake mushroom. That also helps get good bacteria. Then that helps reverse weight gain and the inflammation and metabolic dysfunction that comes with being overweight. So it's all good, and that's what we want to share. And one final thing here from the University of Montana, published in the peer-reviewed journal Activities, Adoption, and Aging, pet ownership and its potential benefits for older people. And I would call anyone over 40 older. And what they found is that when you have a pet that you have to take care of, just you, no one else, and you bond with that and you spend time with that pet, the pet is there for you 24/7. It's there to love you nonstop. It forgives you for everything and is always there to make your world happy. So why shouldn't we have these wonderful, loving creatures in our lives? And for those of you who do already, you know what I'm talking about. For those of you who don't, boy, is it a way of turning off the television and de-stressing and spending that quality time with your pet. Now, your pet could be a bird. Birds are very loving, very smart. And it could be, you know, it could be a ferret. It could be dog, cat, depending upon where you live and what you do. And so get a pet, live a longer life, be de-stressed. By the way, University of Tanzania found that a seaweed extract can really help irritable bowels. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal PLOS ONE. Quote, an extract from, let me spell this for you, F-U-C-O-I-D-A-N-S can provide promise for treating type of inflammatory bowel disease known as ulcerative colitis, which, by the way, like Crohn's disease, is really dangerous. People die from this, and it disrupts their quality of life. And the current treatments are non-constructive long-term. So use that, because there's good research showing that it benefits you. And also use aloe vera. Aloe vera 5 times a day, and cabbage juice, raw organic cabbage juice 3 times a day. One last thing. Coenzyme Q10 treats Parkinson's in a new study from Case Adams from GreenMed Info. And this was done at Japan's Jitendo University School of Medicine. They discovered that coenzyme Q10 can significantly reduce the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. The study lasted 2 years. They tested the group of Parkinson's patients. They divided the patients in 2 groups, and they found that coenzyme Q10, 300 milligrams for 48 weeks, made a huge difference. So I would say 300 milligrams for Parkinson's is way too small, way too small. Should be much higher than that, but at least now people know it works. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Took some time early this morning to read the different emails from around the world. Thank you for caring enough to share the information. Yesterday, we hit 458 million search results for the War on Health. We were in the top 15-page position, so a lot of that was coming based upon that movie. The more you watch a film and appreciate its importance and share it with other people, just keep sharing the articles. And just to give you an idea, some of the articles we've posted today, so people may not be aware of this, these are free as a public service. They're all footnoted and fully referenced. These are ones I've written with our resident scholar, Richard Gale. America's Killing Fields, Forgotten Soldiers of Operation Enduring Freedom. Causes of Violence on School Shootings. Hidden Truth about British Petroleum in the White House. Hidden Hand, the Forces Behind Economic Destruction, a Progressive Stimulus Package for Sustainability, Coal Industry, Unabated War on Americans' Health, Federally Sponsored Corporate Science, Conspiracies or Critical Thinking, Deadly Duo, GMOs and Toxic Pesticides, Escaping the Corporate Matrix, Fluoride, Killing Us Softly, Sugar, Killing Us Sweetly, The Gates Foundation and the New Eugenics Movement, Wolves on Psycho Street, meaning Wall Street, Who Are the True Progressives, The Limping Left, Liberalism Death Toll, 3-part article, Global GMO War on Humanity, U.S. Government to Vets, Drop Dead, Pharmaceutical Industrial Complex, Deadly Fairy Tale. Those are just some of the 60 original articles posted on a whole lot of topics. Read them, share them. Now, let's hear about the second most prescribed drug in America. Who would have thought how many people it actually kills? And how in the world can we justify having this on the market when it kills this many people? Unless a lot of money is exchanging hands between the pharmaceutical companies and regulatory agents. Listen in.
Antidepressants. antidepressants are killing people. A recent report claims the drug kills an estimated 500,000 Americans and Europeans annually. Efficiency trials funded by pharmacy companies are biased, it shows. The study also found psychiatric drugs actually cause 15 times more suicides than reported by the FDA, not to mention some of the side effects like mania, nervousness, and paranoia. The list just goes on. Nonetheless, antidepressants are the second biggest prescribed drug in the U.S., with more than 250 million prescriptions given out each year. Why is there so little attention to this when, well, money talks? The antidepressant market is huge. It was worth $9.4 billion in 2013. Joining us in the now is Peter Gorcha, researcher of this data and professor at Denmark's Nordic Cochrane Center. Your research claims 500,000 deaths are caused by antidepressants annually. It is, of course, alarming. What is it based on?
It's not only antidepressants. I also included antipsychotics and benzodiazepines. And it's based on randomized trials and good observational studies. And I talk about 500,000 deaths every year in those who are 65 or older in the United States and Europe. These drugs also kill many young people.
If we look at the forecast for the antidepressant market, of course, it's a huge market. It is expected to drop in the next couple of years. What is the reason for the numbers going down, the market going down, so to say? Are people becoming more aware of the dangers of antidepressants?
I hope so, but I don't think anybody really knows the reason that it has started to go the other way.
Well, your research argues that the government is underestimating the amount of suicides that antidepressants cause. Why is that?
Yes, this is very strange. A senior official at the American Food and Drug Administration, he published a study based on drug company trials where he had a certain amount of suicides on active drugs. But then 5 years later, the same man was in charge of a very big analysis at the Food and Drug Administration that found only 10% of the suicides he had himself reported 5 years earlier. So this is one of the reasons that I write in an upcoming book that the FDA in America has underestimated suicides on active drug by a factor of 15, approximately. There should have been 15 times more suicides. So these drugs are far more dangerous than we think they are.
Some data suggests that American children are being prescribed three times more psychotropic medication than children in Europe. Why is that?
This is mainly because of a relatively small group of Harvard psychiatrists that have been very active in diagnosing and medicating children. So American children, due to a small group of psychiatrists who have huge financial conflicts of interest in relation to the drug industry, all that has driven American children into a tremendous amount of drug use that is very harmful for them.
All right, Professor Peter Gorcha, researcher and professor at Denmark's Nordic Cochrane Center, with us in the now from Copenhagen. Thanks so much.
Now, what is addiction? Let's hear a short clip from Dr. Gabor Maté about what he believes is the root cause.
All the substances of abuse, whether they're opiates or cocaine or anything else, they're actually painkillers. Some of them specifically are painkillers. But physical pain and emotional pain, the suffering is experienced in the same part of the brain. So when people suffer emotional rejection, the same part of the brain will light up as if you stuck them with a knife. Then Eckhart Tolle says very nicely that addictions begin with pain and end with pain. So that all the addictions are attempts to soothe the pain. So when I work with addictions, the first question is always not why the addiction, but why the pain. And what you find is emotional loss or trauma. In the case of the severe addicts, as in the downtown East Side here, they were every single one of them traumatized. There's no women walking the streets here who had not been sexually abused, not even by accident. But you know, whether it's a sex addiction or internet or relationship or shopping or work addiction, these are all attempts to get away from distress. Keith Richards, the Rolling Stone guitarist, said, who used to have a severe heroin habit, as you know, he said that all the contortions we go through just not to be ourselves for a few hours. Well, why would somebody not want to be themselves? Because they're in too much distress and too much pain. So I don't care what they tell you about genetics or any of that choices or any of that nonsense. It's always about pain. Well, the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, it's got a wonderful line in it. Whatever you do, don't try and escape from your pain, but be with it. Because the attempt to escape from pain is what creates more pain. And that's the reality with addiction. But the question is, how can people live with their pain? Well, only if they sense some compassion from somebody. So as another teacher says, only when compassion is present will people allow themselves to see the truth. So addicted people need a compassionate present which will permit them to experience their pain without having to run away from it. And all the attempts to run away, it's like another teacher says, the surest way to go to hell is to try to run away from hell. So you got to be with that pain. You just have to be with it, but you have to have some support. And we live in a society that one way or the other is always about instant relief, quick satisfaction, distraction. In other words, we live in a culture that is based on, both economically and psychologically, on not supporting people to be with themselves. So it's always the quick getaway. So it's very difficult to deal with addictions in a society. But yeah, it is a matter of, at some point, finding a way of being with your pain, so that you can actually get to know what it's really all about.
Following that, I thought it was interesting to hear what Dr. Michael Berry had to say concerning recognizing that patients who refuse to forgive often stay sick. Let's hear what
he had to say. Did you know that unforgiveness can actually make you sick? It's classified as a disease in medical books. Now, forgiveness therapy is being used to help treat diseases like cancer. Dr. Stephen Standiford, a cancer surgeon, says unforgiveness makes people sick and keeps them sick.
It's important to treat emotional wounds or disorders because they really can hinder someone's reactions to the treatments, even someone's willingness to pursue treatment.
Of all cancer patients, 61% have forgiveness issues, and of those, more than half are severe. That's according to research by Dr. Michael Berry, a pastor and the author of the book, The Forgiveness Project.
These negative emotions, this anger and hatred, creates a state of chronic anxiety. Chronic anxiety very predictably produces adrenaline and cortisol, which deplete the production of natural killer cells, which is your body's foot soldier in the fight against cancer. When a person forgives from the heart, which of course is the gold standard that we use in Matthew 18, forgiveness from the heart, we find that they're able to find a sense of peacefulness. Quite often our patients refer to that as a feeling of lightness. Lori, we don't realize what a burden anger and hatred is until we let it go.
And we see that all the time. In fact, one of the first places to begin a journey of healing is healing from the trauma that creates the disease process. I'll be doing more on that in depth on an upcoming discussion. I'm concerned, and I know many of you are because I've seen your responses, to the signing of the Trans-Pacific Partnership allowing the president to do what he wants now without consulting Congress, and then how this is going to impact us. I see how bad it's going to be. Most people don't. They don't see anything changing today. Gee whiz. Well, it's like jumping off a building. You know, you're in the middle of the air. You don't feel anything. You will. So I want to share some thoughts about how the merging of government and Wall Street into one criminal entity, the rising tide of state fascism in the United States and Canada. And I want to share Joachim Hagopian's thoughts on this as well as my own. Let's begin this. It's been a long time since 9/11, but the U.S. government has rapidly moved from democracy, in my opinion, to fascism. When government acts on behalf of a corporate oligarchy, as declared by the recent Princeton Northwestern University study, state fascism is the result. And First Amendment rights in America have been obliterated in this morphing process. And I'll tell you why. The very fact I'm doing this broadcast and someone hacked in 2 days ago and took us off the air, that wasn't an accident. They've done this 3 times in the last year. Why? Am I saying something that's inaccurate? Or am I guessing something that they're offended by? They don't want this kind of truth out because they're used to having only one truth, their truth. So now just telling anyone what you feel about something, if it goes against the status quo, you could be considered a domestic terrorist and put on their watch list and harassed. And every single thing you do is micro-monitored. Obama has declared war on whistleblowers, those individuals who recognize corporate or government wrongdoing and are ethical and courageous enough to tell the truth in order to try to stop. Nobel Prize nominee Chelsea Manning, as Private Bradley Manning, witnessed U.S. military occupiers committing heinous crimes of war in Iraq and Afghanistan and went public with it on WikiLeaks. And last year was sentenced to 37 years in prison. What did he do wrong? He told the truth that the right, the neocons, the corporatists, the politicians don't want the public to know about. Last June, Edward Snowden revealed the massive violation and invasion of our privacy rights perpetrated by the invisible National Security Agency occupiers in our homes, and he was promptly charged with violating the Espionage Act and forced as a fugitive to live his life in exile. But did he commit a crime? Well, technically, they say he violated the Espionage Act, but that's an archaic law, and about 2 million of our laws in the United States should be written away. They should be abolished. There are laws for the most foolish things. No, I recently watched a video of a young guy who the police approached, and they could see part of his underwear. And in Louisiana, to show any part of your underwear is a crime. So they arrested him, they took him into a prison cell, and they tasered him to death until he died, then let him stay there for a long period of time, and then said that it wasn't their fault, that he didn't die from that, but he did. Why, you made it a crime to show part of your underwear? So that's how bad it's gotten, and it's even worse. News journalists daring to accurately show the Obama administration in an unfavorable light are customarily harassed and threatened with litigation. In reality, those who are standing up to evil are public heroes, yet the government is bent on destroying their lives. The bold young journalist Michael Hastings, who wrote unflattering Rolling Stone articles on powerful generals McChrystal and Petraeus, and was gathering evidence of wrongdoing by the FBI, CIA, and National Security Agency, in my personal opinion, was more likely assassinated by remote hacking of his crashed vehicle last June. Yes, they can hack into your vehicle, and they can control the gas, acceleration, and prevent the brakes. Clearly, just in the last year alone, the U.S. government's war against truth has been steeped in this senseless, sinister, reckless abandon. And they're getting away with it because we're not holding them accountable. We continue to vote for them. Under this growing tyranny and oppression comes the loss of American liberty and freedom, citizens' rights to peacefully assemble and make their views known in public protest have been under systematic and insidious attacks by those in power in both Canada and the United States. The Occupy Wall Street movement, protesting the mounting inequality and injustice between those who have and those who have not, who were further burdened by with bailing out the unscrupulous and corrupt corporate criminals of Wall Street, which are virtually all of them, was brutally squashed with police clubs and tear gas. The orders in cities across the nation to brutally suppress the movement was spreading and growing any larger were clearly orchestrated and issued from Washington's violent, unlawful corporate domain. As if government betrayal and hostility and harassment were not enough travesty of justice, Obama went for overkill, ordering his Justice Department to aggressively pursue hundreds of federal lawsuits against protesters for assault and resisting arrest, when in point of fact, they hadn't broken a law. So if you're resisting not breaking a law, then you're arrested for resisting arrest. Yet when, what law did I break that you would arrest me? Well, you'd broke no law, but you didn't allow us to arrest you. For what? For not breaking a law? That makes no sense. And so time and again, this president, in my opinion, the worst president in American history and the most dangerous, is responsible for virtually shredding the Constitution, and he's a constitutional lawyer. And yet the Council on Foreign Relations, from which many people at The Nation magazine come from, including its director, and we're led to believe they're benign, there's nothing benign about them. The Bilderberg Group, the bankers. Remember when if you said, suggested in any way that the banking community was responsible for our problems, you'd be mocked and ridiculed, especially by those on the left? Well, how'd that work out for you as an acid test when it turned out that the bankers were the problem and they got $21 trillion in interest-free money? Of the 2,644 people arrested during Occupy Wall Street protests in New York City, there is one that may be the only demonstrator tried in court of law and found guilty of felony and assault. 2 weeks that process went on for elbowing a police officer on March 17, 2012, from Rikers Island Prison, where she was waiting sentence and sentenced. Quote, my lawyer told me to expect 2 years. And she was told by the judge, you must be responsible for your conduct. So a 25-year-old graduate student is sentenced to 3 months prison time plus community service and 5 years probation. And what about all the police that kill innocent people, harass innocent people, engage in racial profiling? What about their sentences? What about their criticism? What about anything that shows that we care? Injustice permeates every part of our lives. The exact same aggressive federal tactics are recently being utilized for the first time to criminalize protests of environmentalists, charging demonstrators with active domestic terrorism. Five months ago in Oklahoma City, two college students placed a banner objecting to the local company Devon Energy participating in the Keystone Pipeline project inside its Devon Towers building, an attempt to raise awareness of the severe detrimental effects of human health that fracking causes on the environment. The two protesters were jailed and charged with terrorism. And state law says you deserve 10 years in prison. So there we have it. So it's not safe to protest anything today without being profiled. So where's our freedom then? Our freedom of speech, our freedom of assembly, our freedom of protest, our freedom to write an article. Every single person that writes an article, signs a petition, shows up for protest, says anything at all, they are now on an enemy watch list. And yet, you would think that this is something that's normal. It is not. It is anything but normal. I'm Gary Knoll. Now, we're going to go to our guest in a moment. Please stay with us. Let's say hello to Dr. Renee Toko. Dr. Toko is the president of the Foundation for Pediatric Health and also the founder of Hope for Autism. She has a practice in South Carolina specializing in children's health and conditions. She's a graduate of Sherman College, and she earned her doctorate, and she's with us now. Nice to have you with us today.
What a pleasure, Gary.
Right now, the CDC and the pro-vaccine industry is adamant that there is no relation between vaccine and autism, but their focuses are not on all vaccines. And you have taken the time and the scholarship to look at two vaccines that are very serious. So they're ignoring the science statistics of other vaccines, notably the HIB and hepatitis B vaccines. And your foundation did review the studies that cite the risks. So what are the conclusions of your review of their primary studies, and how scientifically credible are there studies at the CDC saying there's no relationship between vaccines and autism? And what do your studies of the vaccines they didn't look at show us?
Well, basically, when anybody reviews the science that the CDC is using, it's clearly apparent that they are intentionally misleading the public. As you mentioned, they make statements. They have a whole website page dedicated to the fact that vaccines have been proven not to cause autism. And as you mentioned, our foundation did an extensive review of those studies. And basically, as you mentioned, none of the studies look at two specific vaccines that were introduced coincidentally right when autism began to skyrocket in the 1980s and early 1990s. Interestingly enough, health officials really have only studied one vaccine, which would be the measles vaccine, and one ingredient, thimerosal, to determine if vaccines have caused the explosion of childhood illness that we've seen in the last two decades. So for them to be boldly making the statement that vaccines do not cause autism is just, you know, absolutely inappropriate, and it's deceptive. Right now, people may notice that all across the country, we're seeing vaccine bills pop up, you know, bills to take away parental exemptions. And, you know, it's clearly not because of the small, minuscule measles outbreak that we saw in Florida, nor is it coincidental. This whole plan started back in 2010, where partners from all over the world came together with the global commitment to create the most highly vaccinated planet on the, you know, just to vaccinate everybody. And they called 2010 to 2020 the decade of vaccines in their plan. And these days, American children receive 49 doses of 16 different vaccines before they're 5 years old. You know, there are more than 300 vaccines in current development. So of those 16 different vaccines that children are administered time and time and time again, for our CDC to simply look at one vaccine and one ingredient and then make claims that vaccines don't cause autism and other illness is just, you know, it's criminal.
Okay, but let's be specific. I like detailed facts and scholarship, because this is a program of record. So we can all use some broad-based, well, we believe that these vaccine studies are not objective. Give us specific studies that show there is a relationship between vaccines and autism.
You know, truthfully, there are probably about 100 different specific peer-reviewed scientific articles that I refer to all of the time. I believe that the evidence in support of that is, you know, there's tons of it, especially the Children's Medical Safety Research Institute has done a wealth of evidence looking at the aluminum in vaccines. But what our campaign is focused on is the fact that there are two specific vaccines introduced right at the time that autism started to skyrocket, for which there have been no studies. And so, as we mentioned, if you look, for example, at the hepatitis B vaccine, which is one of the vaccines given right at birth, there was one particular study published in, 2009, showing that tripled the rate of autism in boys in particular. That is the only existing study for the hepatitis B vaccine in existence. Now, that was a smaller study, but that's all that we have to go on. And so that's a vaccine that is repeatedly administered. And just so you know, the risk for hepatitis B disease is about 1 in 200,000 for all children ages 1 to 4, that they would get the actual disease. So to be administering a vaccine for which there is no science that coincidentally, you know, other than this one study showing a triple rate of autism in boys, again, the CDC is making claims they cannot substantiate. Even the risk of the HIV disease in children is 1 in 106,000 risk of death. And again, on that vaccine, there's no science to be found. One of the things that we did in particular, we've put out an official challenge to Senator Pan, who is the author of SB 277 in California. We have put out an official challenge for his team to provide a single study on either of these two vaccines, because that really is the foundation of why these types of bills are so completely unconstitutional. You know, to require a child to be fully vaccinated or deny their entry into public or private school when there are vaccines on the schedule where there's a complete lack of science, you know, that's just completely unconstitutional and wrong. And then, you know, you're probably familiar, and I'm sure that you've also talked about what's happened with Dr. William Thompson. And his admission that he participated in the cover-up of links between vaccines and autism when he was working for the CDC. You know, that's a whole other debacle, but he was actually one of the researchers at CDC that said that he was basically ordered to suppress the data that he came up with by his higher-ups in the CDC. And they basically, he admitted several months back that through the use of a collection of unethical statistical tricks, the senior officials at CDC chose to publish reassuring findings about the MMR when the honest results of their analysis showed clear links between early vaccination with the MMR and autism risk, particularly in African-American boys. So at this point, members of Congress have been looking at that information for many months, reviewing the documents. They believe it's going to have to be reviewed by the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, who will then move forward and hopefully hold hearings. But again, it's going to take public pressure to make sure that these people are held accountable.
Well, I appreciate the work your foundation is doing and the Foundation for Pediatric Health, because you've assembled all these articles that many people are not aware of. These are peer-reviewed, journaled, independent articles showing the dangers of vaccines, the lack of safety of the vaccines, the lack of efficacy of the vaccines, and especially two vaccines, the HIV vaccine, which was introduced in 1985, and the hepatitis B in 1991. And these were where you saw the large spike in autism in the United States. And the one article that does exist shows a substantial increase in autism from the hepatitis B vaccine, and yet they choose not to touch these. We also have put out a request to the doctor to come on this program and to debate me or invite me out there to present information under oath, scientific information, on why the vaccines that they're mandating are neither safe nor effective individually or collectively for any single person. They refuse that. And unfortunately, 99% of the discussion in the state of California has been pro-vaccine. News media will not invite the people who challenge vaccine on, and even Pacifica's KPFA censored Bonnie Faulkner in a discussion of vaccine safety and efficacy for the discussion in California, hence siding with, whether intentional or not, with the pharmaceutical industry, which is unfortunate. So the people who have the evidence, the doctors, Dr. Tony Bark, who's out there, Dr. Sherry Timpany, myself, we're not getting onto the mainstream media. The one radio program we did get on, I got on and debated. At the end of the hour, the person left. I mean, just left. Say, well, I'm out of here, you know, and don't allow him to attack me. That's what the parting word was. And I'm thinking, whoa, that a debate can be heard up on my website. People can download it. So we need to get this information out. So anyone anywhere in America who cares about the truth about the vaccine-autism connection and the danger of vaccines that we'd be mandated, go to my guest's site, Dr. Renee Toko's site, And that site is, could you give that, please?
Sure. It's www.findoutwhocares.org. Okay. We actually have created an interesting campaign that we hope is appealing to people who are real knowledgeable about the whole vaccine debate and even for those who are not. And it starts with an optional, interesting quiz where people can test their knowledge.
But we're out of time right now for this. I have one more segment I want to play. Okay. But you've done a good job, and we know the people are serious. We'll go to your site and download the many articles that you have. Thank you very much, Dr. Renee Tocco, our newsmaker for today. We're going to complete our show today by giving you 10 disgusting fast food secrets that the average person is not aware of, and maybe you should inform them, especially if you have a loved one or family friend that just loves to chomp down on those fast foods.
Chicken McNuggets may be good, but they have been found to contain a silicone oil that is also used for making contact lenses and medical devices. Don't worry, though. The chemically engineered silicone oil is non-toxic, but does that mean it's still good to eat? Johns Hopkins University researchers tested chickens that supply fast food chains and found a long list of prescriptions added to chicken feed as additives. Some such as antidepressants, antibiotics, arsenic, and allergy medications. Do you like green foods? Well, McDonald's uses propylene glycol to preserve their prepackaged salads, so they stay nice and crisp, as they may sit there for days. The same chemical is also used in antifreeze and vapor liquid for e-cigarettes. Apple pie. Cysteine L, an amino acid synthesized from human hair or duck feathers, is used to create artificial flavors for meat and help soften mass-produced breads or pastries. McDonald's uses this in their apple pie and other baked goods. Silicone dioxide, also known as sand, has plenty of uses in industrial space, such as manufacturing glass, fiber optic cables, and cement. It's also used in the fast food field to prevent clumping. It's what allows the yummy Wendy's chili to sit in the pot for so long without turning into a big lump. Dimethyl polysiloxane is pretty much in every fried item you get at any fast food joint you go into. The same silicone compound is found in Silly Putty, a children's toy, but the fast food industry uses it to reduce the fryer oil from getting foamy. Tertiary butyl hydroquinone, also known as TBHQ, comes from petroleum and is mostly used in cosmetics, skincare products, lacquers, and resins. TBHQ has been found in 18 menu items at McDonald's. It took years for TBHQ to be approved for human consumption by food manufacturers. The FDA only allows the chemical to be 0.02% of a food's oil and fat because 5 grams of it is lethal. Cellulose, produced from wood pulp, is used in plenty of processed foods used by fast food chains. It's in everything from ice cream, syrups, salad dressings, and much more. It's used as a thickener and a way to use less flour and oil, which are more expensive. Pretty much every fast food place you can think of uses it. Ammonium sulfate is a soil fertilizer that is used to feed yeast while baking mass-produced breads for fast food chains. Eating the same stuff that is meant to kill bugs definitely can't be good for you. Carminic acid is synthesized from cochineal beetles and is most known for red food coloring. To make it, the beetles are dried out and crushed to extract the red properties from it to use for dyes. These dyes are used in meats, sausages, bakery products, toppings, marinades, desserts, and much more.
And those are 10 items that you get when you eat fast foods. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall. Look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day.
Girl, try to remember when we didn't have no shoes. We stuck together, just me and you. It took a long time to get what we got today. Now you wanna give it all up for another guy. Baby, I'm telling you, don't let me mess with ya.
baby, feel my life all over. But baby, you got the love that I really need. Cause if you leave me this way, baby, you know what? I may not live to see a brand new day.